Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode.
Let's go.
Our guest today is Amanda Daly, a professor of behavioral medicine and a research professor in public health at the National Institute for Health Research. She is also the director of the Center for Lifestyle Medicine and Behavior. Amanda's work is focused on investigating the effects of lifestyle interventions on health outcomes. She is the chief investigator on several ongoing trials examining the effectiveness of community and general practice-based physical activity and weight management interventions. She works closely with public health organizations and other stakeholders. Amanda, welcome to That Fitness Couple.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the nice description of the work that I do. So yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, we'll dive into some true or false, and then we can't wait to dive into a specific research topic that piqued Mike's interest so much. He's like, we got to have her on. So your first true or false, and of course, if you feel like it needs a caveat, you can add that. But your first true or false is that you specialize in behavior medicine.
That's absolutely true.
All right. Number two, you've had a lifelong fascination with the human body and brain.
Definitely true.
Cool. You are interested in improving the health of the population.
Oh, totally. Yeah, very much so.
Number four, you believe in being a lone researcher tackling issues all by yourself.
False. With a little caveat.
The next is you believe preventable, non-communicable diseases have nothing to do with choices and behavior.
False.
All right. The most common cause of death and disability worldwide is our behavior, such as physical activity, diet, smoking, and alcohol.
Definitely true.
Awesome. Your work is utilized on an online platform that encourages and supports collaboration between researchers and health specialists.
That's very true. That's called Ricky.
Love it.
Excellent. Last one. You work out of Australia.
I'd like to, but I don't. I work in the United Kingdom. It's much warmer there.
I love it. Well, we can't wait to dive into this paper that really caught Mike's eye. But first, you know, we would love to just hear a little bit of your background, really how you became fascinated with the human body and the brain.
Yeah, I guess I've always had an interest in the human body and the brain and, you know, the combination of the two in relation to how we live our lives and how we feel about our lives. I think when we put the two components together, it gives us a much better understanding of how the body works. I mean, my head is attached to my body, so it's really important to think about the interaction between those two dimensions of my life. So I think we can get so much more information about people when we think about the whole body and the whole system. So when we're understanding people, it's really important to think about both of those kind of dimensions.
The reason why we reached out to you was because you are part of a group that is doing a study, and it's on Snacktivity, which many of our listeners we'll be somewhat familiar with. We've talked about exercise snacks. Before we get into the study itself, I just need to know who came up with the name, because I was like supremely jealous when I heard this. I was like, oh my gosh, that is the greatest name ever for exercise snacks. So who gets the credit for that one?
I believe I did, but I'm part of a team that kind of developed this. Initially, we started off with the idea of snackicizing rather than snacktivity. And we changed from the exercise dimension in snackicizing to snacktivity because we wanted it to be about activity and be applicable to everybody in all parts of life rather than just focusing on the exercise dimension, because we see the two as quite different. So that's why we changed from snackicizing to snacktivity. So really love the term. So yeah.
So what was the aim of this study? Can you just lay out for everybody, I mean, what you guys have set out to do through this research?
Yeah, so we're funded by the National Institute for Health Research, which is the kind of research component of the National Health Service in the United Kingdom. And it's a five-year program of research, but because of COVID, we're actually going to be doing the program of research over 7 years. So it takes quite a long time when you're developing a new concept to get good evidence around it. So we've been developing the concept so far for about 2 to 3 years. So we're about halfway through the seven-year program of research. So it takes quite a long time. People forget how long it takes to be able to develop a concept from the outset right through to the end. So yeah, we're about halfway through, but we've got quite a lot of studies completed so far in the whole program. There's around sort of 8 individual studies that are going to help us understand how the public engage with SNAC activity and whether it's really a worthwhile approach to think about promoting.
And now specific to this paper that you guys had just recently put out, I mean, can you lay out, you know, again, the methods, how you developed it, you know, who did you reach out to? How did you get this group together? I mean, can you give us like a detailed breakdown of what this research showed?
So in relation to SNAC activity itself, we've done quite a few studies recently, but I think it might be worth just outlining what SNAC activity is, and then we can maybe talk about what the studies have found. So SNAC activity takes an approach where it says it's easier for the public to engage in things that are small and simple. So rather than focusing on long bouts of physical activity or an exercise, it gets the public to think about doing lots of short snacks of activity throughout their whole day, such that they get to the guidance amount of 150 minutes of physical activity. Because if you tell people to do it in long bouts of 30 minutes or 40 minutes, that can be quite daunting. But if you tell people to do it in snacks of 2 to 5 minutes, then they think, oh, geez, yeah, I can do that. I can give that a go. I can try to achieve that. So that's kind of one of the fundamental principles of SNAC activity. It's really about encouraging the public to understand that, you know, it's a small ask, and to think about building confidence small ways rather than asking for a long way. And the other thing, I think the key thing about SNAC activity is that it doesn't involve lots of time. So we're all short. And we need, yeah. And so that's one of the biggest barriers to physical activity. So if I say to you, geez, could you think about incorporating, you know, a few 2 to 5 minutes of activity during your day, you're going to find it much more difficult to say, no, I don't have a few 2 to 5 minutes throughout my day. So that I think is really, really important. And the other key thing about SNAC activity is that it doesn't involve equipment. It doesn't involve paying a gym membership. You can do it during your day. So SNAC activity might include going for an extra walk. It might include squats while you're waiting for the kettle to boil. Most kettles take around 2 minutes to boil. So rather than standing there watching the kettle and the water boil, right, you can do some calf raises, you can do some squats, you can do whatever it is that you want to do. Similarly, when you're watching TV, I mean, in America, you have many more adverts in your TV programs, but rather than sitting there passively, you could do some leg raises. You can do something in those gaps, in those breaks in your day to make SNAC activity really time efficient. And if you put all those little snacks together throughout your day, then you should be able to get to the guidance amount of 150 minutes of physical activity without actually thinking about it very much. Another great one is potentially calf raises when you're brushing your teeth. So the guidance is that you brush your teeth for at least 2 minutes every day. That's the minimum amount for a snack. So while you're brushing your teeth, you could get some SNAC activity in as well. So it's thinking about those times in your day where you could accumulate those kinds of things. So to get back to your question about the studies, we've done quite a lot of studies. And the first, and I think probably the most important study, was to ask the public, because we're asking the public to have a mindset change about how they approach physical activity. We're saying now you're going to have to do lots of bits throughout your day, whereas previously the guidance has been about doing 30 minutes, you know, going for a long walk and so on. So we did a survey of people registered at general practices or family practices in the UK to say, hey, what do you think about this approach? Do you think it's going to work in your life? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? How do you see this working for you? And overall, most of the participants said, yeah, I think it's a great idea. We like the name. It's catchy. It resonates with us. We can remember it. And I think one of the key distinctions or feedback points that we got from the public was, yeah, it's great when I'm at home, it's great on the weekends, but it's a little bit more tricky when I'm at work, because now I'm going to have to start thinking about bobbing up and down, if you like, to try and fit in my snacks. Whereas, you know, when you just do your 30-minute workout, you go, you do it, and it's all done. You haven't got to worry about it anymore. Whereas now with Snacktivity, you have to worry about it a little bit more. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing, though. And I think, you know, post-COVID, when we're all at home much more and we're all sitting for, you know, prolonged periods of time, we do need ways now to get the public to be less sedentary and for sitting for long periods of time, because we know that in itself is an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So we've got to think about how we're going to get the public to be more active during their day. Sitting for 2 to 3 hours at a time is really, really bad for our health. And Snacktivity could address that, issue. So yes, yeah, so we've done lots of different studies that I could talk about for a long time, but so far the evidence seems to suggest that it's got some legs.
I like how you take something that could be very daunting and you've made it bite-size. No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. It's a snack. But, you know, I think we have to think about how are we going to make physical activity accessible and implementable to the public. And my view is that we've had guidance and we've had ideas around physical activity for a long time, but it doesn't seem to be working. You know, physical activity participation levels haven't changed for decades. So we can keep doing what we're doing in terms of the messages that we give to the public, or we can say, we can change this. Let's think of a different way. Let's not keep doing what we've been doing, because if we do that, the end point will be the same. So let's think differently. Let's stop doing what we always do. So that's kind of what Snacktivity is also about. It's about innovating. It's about thinking really simply and trying to reach people where they're at to try and really build their confidence to start. Because physical activity, you know, it's killing thousands of people every year throughout the world. And those lives could be prevented if we just got people to just move from doing nothing to just doing a little bit. Would actually make a huge difference.
That point, I think that what's very interesting, and you kind of brought it up, what's been given to us though as the recommendations? I mean, a lot of the times these recommendations of 150 minutes, it's not really taking into account the type of activity that people are doing. And we know that that plays into this as well. And I think we can have a deeper conversation about that in a moment. But before we do, I'm very interested to hear about, you know, the cohorts that you've been studying with this, like who are the people that you have been presenting this to and then have been, you know, taking this on and saying, you know what, I think I could do this. I'm going to start implementing it. I mean, can tell us a little bit more about the demographics.
Sure. So one of the fundamental principles of Snacktivity is not just to get the public more physically active. It's also about trying to integrate the message into healthcare. So we want a position where every healthcare professional, when a patient comes in, they raise the topic of Snacktivity and they raise the topic of physical activity. And we think healthcare professionals will be much more likely to at least have that conversation because it's an easier conversation to have. Just integrate a little bit more physical activity in your lives rather than trying to get your patients to turn their lives upside down to try and encourage physical activity. So we've been asking healthcare professionals at the end of their healthcare consultations to raise the topic with their patients in routine consultations by adding on a few extra minutes to have that conversation from a trusted healthcare professional. And what we found is the patients like it. It's not a big ask. But also critically, the healthcare professionals are also okay with it because they're comfortable with raising a simple thing or a simple ask of patients. And if, again, if we make it simple for healthcare professionals, they're more likely to keep raising it. And that in itself should then encourage and prompt and nudge people to think about doing more physical activity. So that's kind of where we're at with Snacktivity.
And then with respect to, I'm trying to remember which study it was I was just reading of yours. Okay. So it was the qualitative study one that I was reading through. You know, again, in here, you gave a very good breakdown of the different demographics, you know, gender, race, all that stuff. You know, talk to me a little bit more about that. Like, you know, were you specifically trying, because you mentioned early when we were talking, it's a lot of this is about accessibility. right? We want to try to make fitness more accessible to more people. So how did that also tie into, you know, what you're doing with Snacktivity?
Yeah, we thought quite a lot about how we could make Snacktivity accessible. And one of the fundamental principles of Snacktivity is that it should be appealing to everybody, regardless of fitness level and regardless of ability, and also regardless of disability. So a lot of the Snacktivity principles and a lot of the Snacktivity ideas are based on people who, for example, are in wheelchairs, should still be able to do some Snacktivity during their day. And we've got what's called a snack board, and it's got lots of different ideas or things that, that people can do. And within the snack board, there are activities and pictures of people who are living with a disability as well. And I think the other key thing about Snacktivity is that it places relatively equal emphasis on aerobic-based activity and strength and balance and resistance-based activity, because the whole strength and balance and resistance thing often gets left to one side, and we focus on the aerobic components. And certainly for women as they get older and become postmenopausal, and also for elderly and older people, really important that they incorporate, you know, resistance-based activity into their lives. So I think that's really important too. And I guess one of the things about resistance and balance-based exercises is that participation rates are really, really low. You know, most countries, less than 10% of people will meet the guidance amount for resistance activity. And actually, a lot of people push the aerobics. I'm not saying the aerobics not important. I'm just saying the resistance and balance and strength is really important for an overall kind of strong body.
How do you think that? I mean, just in your research, right? We're probably biased in our answer, and that we own fitness studios and we're promoting resistance training. Why do you think? Do you think it's a lack of education, a lack of access, like, or is it something else?
In terms of the strength and resistance-based exercise?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess often people are focused on burning calories and they think that they can get that from more aerobic-based activity rather than strength and resistance. I think strength and resistance has historically been seen as kind of more painful because you put more exertion through your body than you might do during aerobic. Also, I guess it's often people perceive that you need to be strong to do it, that you need equipment, whereas maybe aerobic-based exercise that you don't. In Snacktivity, we don't use any equipment whatsoever. So all the resistance-based snacks or examples that we give are all just involved as sort of resistance against the body rather than using weights and all those kinds of things. So
we're hoping that... Give us a few examples of those.
So squats is a good one. It might be stair sit-ups. It might be leg raises. I'm trying to think off the top of my head what some of the... Yeah, against the wall. So rather than using a shopping trolley, use a basket, you know, try and put some resistance through the arms rather than pushing. So just, yeah, everyday things, potentially using some cans to do some raises. I think we had another example of a weighted rucksack walk. So using a combination of the two. Yeah, I'm running out of ideas now.
I think that's great. I mean, one thing that we've made mention throughout our podcast from time and time again, even though we oftentimes will follow a structured workout routine and we're following that usually twice a week at minimum. And again, those 30 minutes, we recognize that even for us, there's times where, hey, a week gets crazy. Maybe you can't get to your gym or whatever. And that this becomes just an excellent way for maintaining the strength and muscle that you've developed. And you can do small things that don't take up a lot of time. I mean, we are big proponents of 2 to 3 minute bouts of intense exercise. So whether that's doing a wall sit and trying to push it from a minute to two minutes for those who are capable of doing a pull-up or at least attempting a pull-up, you know, just having that degree of resistance against the body is what's critical. And I'm just so happy too to hear you say, or at least talk about the importance of the strength component, because I think what a lot of people miss also is that so much of the aerobic component that they're looking for actually comes from doing the strength training exercises. And I don't mind, you know, you getting more sciencey on this, because I always like to, and I say that, you know, people, if you understand anything about the Corey cycle, not the Corey Beth cycle, but the Corey cycle, right? That's where people are doing very intense anaerobic exercise. Yeah. And when they do that type of exercise, whether we're talking about sprints or resistance training, they oftentimes just think, oh, this has nothing to do with my aerobic energy system, not recognizing that these two energy systems work together, can't separate them, and that it's in the recovery process of doing intense anaerobic activity that you actually get a lot of the aerobic benefit. And so in many ways, it's like you're killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
I just love the integration, though, of being able to do that in these really short 1 to upwards of 3 minute bouts throughout your day. And I mean, it's such an awesome way for anyone to ensure that they are getting the proper amount of activity, but not just activity. In this case, we're actually talking about very intentional exercise, right?
Yeah. So I'm not a physiologist, but I do know that it's a really efficient way to be able to incorporate two types of exercise. And I think it goes back to educating the public. I mean, the public come with all kinds of different thoughts about physical activity and about exercise. And I guess it's our collective job to re-educate the public about these myths often about how we go about doing our activity. But I think physical activity and snacktivity are really clearly really important for health. And to some extent, we don't really care how people do it, right? As long as people do it, as long as people get in the habit, it's part of their normal lives. And that's a $1 million question, isn't it? How do we do that? How do we get people to commit to the sort of the things that activity can bring to your life? You know, the habit formation of living a life with physical activity. That's the tricky bit. You know, implementing it, sticking to it, maintaining it is critical. And I always sort of say, when people wake up in the morning, you don't think about whether you're going to brush your teeth or not. It's, you know, you just do it, right? It's part of the habit. It's just an everyday thing. And that's kind of where we want to get to with people and physical activity. It's just what you do. It's just the habit. It's integrated into your life. And we hope that snacktivity is a way of building those healthy habits. Eventually, people won't really think about the fact that they're doing snacktivity. When they stand and wait for the kettle, it's just what they do every day. Just like when you wake up and brush your teeth, it's just what you do. And I think when we get to that point, it will be great. And we'll all be out of a job, right? But that at least we'll be saving lives.
That would be a goal. I mean, I have a theory that if we just get rid of the internet, we could probably get a lot of people outside and moving, but you know, that's not going to happen. So my question to you is, what is your favorite snacktivity?
My snack, I often raise my legs when I'm watching TV. That's kind of one of my big things, because I don't do enough resistance-based exercise. And I'm also quite keen on a kitchen disco. So when I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking or doing things, rather than standing and waiting for the vegetables to boil, I can actually do something, right? So play some music and get the heart rate moving while I'm cooking. I don't cook very often, but kitchen disco is good fun, right? Get the kids involved, get the family involved. Let's all dance together for a few minutes each day. That's one snack. So towards my 150 in the week.
In America, we call that a dance party. So I'm with you. Kitchen disco. I may rename mine. That's really fun. Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
You mentioned habits and that this is all about helping people to build some of these habits. And was there anything that your research group was doing in terms of helping to educate these people on how they can make this more habitual? Because we say that you got to make this a habit, but like, what interventions are we giving people to help them make it a habit?
So one of the key things that we promote is action planning. So how and when you're going to do things and thinking about and integrating things into your normal life. Because if you have to plan a little bit, but if you have to plan too much, it's a little bit tricky to incorporate. So we try and think about encouraging people to do simple things, simple planning, you know, how and when you're going to do things. And eventually over time, once those things are integrated, it just becomes part of normal life. So that's been one of the key things, to try and make it automatic. So it becomes normal when you're boiling your vegetables to do some squats or to do your kitchen disco. That can take a little bit of time though. But I think when the ask is small or smaller, it's easier to habitualize. It's easier to integrate into your life. Whereas if you're asking for big things, it can be much more difficult. So our plan is to start small. That's not to say that you can't do longer bouts of physical activity. And clearly longer bouts of activity are still really important for health. But maybe the small, starting small can lead to longer bouts over time. And then that becomes habitual. I always, because I like to run, and I always sort of say to myself, okay, don't have the conversation with yourself, Amanda, about whether you're going to run or not. It's just what you do. When you wake up in the morning, you have your breakfast, you go for your run, and that stops me thinking, oh, I'm not going to run today, because it's just habitual. I wouldn't think to myself, oh, I'm not going to brush my teeth today, right? It's a habit. It's what we do. I wouldn't think, oh, I'm not going to bother going to work today. That's, again, just an automatic thing that you do. So I always think, don't have too much cognitions going on in your mind. It's just normal part of what you do each day. When you start the cognitions going, that's when the questions come. And that's when it's like, I'm too busy. I haven't got time for this.
And it's so easy to get caught in that loop of I'm too busy, or, you know, you get so busy that you don't even think about this. And we were mentioning that earlier with respect to work. You know, you can get going with your day and quickly forget, which is why I think back to recommendation Corey Beth often gives to a lot of clients that she works with. Usually it's setting reminders on your phone, you know, just having that alarm go off at a certain point in the day, like almost a random time in the day when you wouldn't really be planning for it. And that could be your reminder to get up and do your 1 to 2 minutes of activity and start, you know, now if you have those reminders going off at different points throughout your workday, especially that, you know, is a very simple strategy that almost anybody can put into practice.
Sure. I mean, one of the things that we have within the Snacktivity program is what we call a snack app, which links to a Fitbit, and it will tell people how many snacks or active minutes they're doing each day. And also it will beep every hour and tell them, come on, guys, it's time to do a snack because you've been sat for too long. And one of the other things that has gone on is a roulette, because people often say, oh, in the moment, they can't think about what snack might be a good thing to do. So on the snack app, they press the roulette, and the roulette will give them an example of a snack right there in the moment that they can do. So it takes away all the thinking. You don't have to, because otherwise you have to remember lots and lots of different ideas for Snacktivity, but the snack app does it all for you. So hopefully that kind of helps people to prompt them to get involved in their Snacktivity. I mean, you know, if you're in a meeting or whatever, it's not always easy to do that, right? You can't just sort of stop and say, hey guys, I'm a...
You got to get on the floor for like 5 minutes. Hold on.
just give me this. This will only take a minute.
Yeah. 2 minutes. Minimum 2 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. Or you put the phone down, right? And say, I'll call you back after I've done my snack.
Yeah.
But, you know, why not? You know?
Yeah.
Nothing's more important than your health, right? So.
True.
I mean, I love, though, the fact that you also gamified it.
Yeah.
With the roulette, I think is the coolest thing, because
to play.
I know, exactly. Yeah. It's like, can we play? Is this app available? I mean, is this just something, is the app something that you're just using right now in this period of research, or is this something that's actively available to people?
It's at the moment, it's only available in the research, but over time we hope to make it available. But yeah, not at the moment, but in time, I think it will be available. We still need to do some more testing on it. We need to add some more snacks, and we're constantly trying to think about different ways in which we can promote Snacktivity. But we have picture boards and things that we can share with people if they were to get in touch, in terms of an actual kind of physical paper examples of different snacks that might work for people in their day.
Thank you. Yeah.
If you ever want more recommendations of of more intense exercises to do, we're more than happy to contribute some of those.
And I guess the other really important thing to say about Snacktivity is that it is moderate. All the snacks are moderate to vigorous intensity. Snacktivity isn't about light. And so I always say it's not like a little shopping shuffle. It's moderate to vigorous. We want people to engage. We want it to be intentional and purposeful, because that's not to say that light activity is not important for health, but certainly when you're in that moderate to vigorous zone, you can get so much more benefits in terms of your health. So,
right into the physiology of it all is that, know, light activity really is not going to produce a whole lot, which is why when, you know, oftentimes when doctors have recommended like, oh, just go for a nice, easy walk, it's like a nice, easy walk is not going to produce the stimulus that somebody needs in order to make the necessary adaptations in order to become healthier. And that's why I like this, because it's encouraging people, get your heart rate up and fatigue your muscles. Because really, I mean, it's only with that certain degree of fatigue that your body has a reason to get stronger and to develop. And, you know, now you've taken time out as an excuse, because even a lot of the research that I've read from Martin Gabala and John Little, right, they were really like at the forefront of this idea of exercise snacks. And it was all born out of their study of high intensity interval training. And I think it was like, what, in 2009 was like their first discovery that with 6 minutes worth or upwards of 9 minutes worth of intense exercise in the course of a week, they had subjects who were matching those individuals who were doing 30 to 60 minutes of moderate activity a day in terms of their cardiorespiratory fitness. It was like they matched it with, I mean, such an insignificant amount of exercise, which is why I think that the more we're encouraging people to do more intense exercise, moderate to vigorous, as you describe it, I mean, that is the key to actually making this work, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a place for light activity. And I think, you know, if we think about elderly people, for example, it may well be a good starting point. I mean, you know, if you've just had a baby and you're starting back into physical activity, you know, light activity might be a good place in which to start and get people moving and get their confidence. But ultimately, we do want people in that MVPA range where they are, you know, getting their heart rate raised. You know, we don't want people doing a little shopping shuffle, because, as I say, that's not really going to get, you know, optimal health benefits. And I think also, you know, if people are looking to sort of, you know, to think about losing weight or to maintain any weight loss, then we really need to be, you know, getting that heart rate up to a reasonable level. And not least, that's where the guidance is, right? The guidance for public health physical activity is about MVPA. And so that's where we need to be encouraging people to get to.
I guess also, I mean, I should even clarify, things have to be put in context. What we call light activity could be somewhat moderate to intense activity for somebody who is coming from a place of being completely out of shape or suffered a big injury and has been, you know, bedridden for a while. So for those listening, it's not to say that those activities can't be intense and there's not ways to make them more intense. It's just all based in context. We know whether or not we are actually pushing ourselves. And I think that's the message that we want to get across to people, is like, just understand you have to push your limitations if you're expecting to make any type of progress.
Yeah. And I think that's also one of the kind of the strengths of snacktivity, is that when you ask, you're asking people to do that, but you're asking them to do it for a relatively short period of time. Okay, you're asking them to do it for multiple times, but in terms of exertion, it's only a short period, right? It's not a 30-minute run or 30-minute, you know, seriously brisk walk. So from what we've seen, that is a reasonable ask. You know, the members of the public are able to achieve that over a week. I think a lot of people are scared as well. They're often scared about raising their heart rate. They're not comfortable with that. And I think if you've not done that before, it can be scary, right? So if you just do it for a short period of time, then hopefully people can see that you can do it and survive, right? Nothing's bad's going to happen to you. It's okay. But that's also about confidence. And I think it is our duty to develop people's confidence to take part, because I think without confidence and efficacy, I think we're going to struggle to get people to move.
I love that.
Well, and considering that after you just do that 2-minute bout of hard exercise, I mean, you literally have hours to recover before you have to do it again. I think that's also the nice part about this, is unlike doing, you know, high intensity interval training where you finish up that hard 20-second bout, you have a few seconds to recover and you have to do that again and again and again for upwards of your 5 to 10 minutes. This is a much easier step-by-step approach, and you may find people gradually increasing the number of snacktivity they do throughout the day, because they're starting now to build that resilience and build that cardiorespiratory fitness that allows them to do it. And so now the volume becomes the next goal. So I love it.
Yeah. And also, I think we mustn't forget the kind of sedentary time as well, and the sitting as well, because it means that if you're doing it, let's for argument's sake, say you're doing 7 snacks, one every hour, it does mean that your prolonged sitting is reduced. And that's really important for health. I think we're going to start to see lots of issues post-COVID around musculoskeletal health and back pain and all those sorts of things, because of the amount of time that people have sat. And I guess one of the things that we haven't touched on is also mental health, the boost that gives you, that mood increase from taking regular snacks throughout your day, when things are getting on top of you a little bit, you know, taking a step, taking a time out, thinking about making sure that your mental health is good too, is really important for health.
I want to dive into that, and just because we may not touch on these true or false. So you're not in Australia, you're in London, specifically Birmingham, and you do love to collaborate with others. You're definitely not a lone researcher. I love how you actually said that collaborative research advances scientific knowledge, helping us to go further faster, which is definitely shown in your work and your study. Let's talk a little bit about this preventable non-communicable diseases, you know, cardio health, respiratory health, all the things that you spoke about, or I should say you typically speak about, that these are totally influenced by our behaviors and choices, specifically physical activity, diet, smoking, and alcohol. What are your findings there? Because I think most people don't know. I think the statistic is 80% of heart attacks, 80% of many of the cancers, they're preventable. So being a researcher, being in this field, what have you found?
So we found that, you know, not just my work, but there's, you know, there's a whole wealth of research around the world that has shown that, you know, the behaviors that you've just talked about are really important. So let's just take cancer as an example. You know, there are really good studies now that have shown that if you are active, your risk of many cancers is reduced. You know, none of us want to get cancer. It's not a particularly nice disease to get, but I'm encouraged by the fact that it is preventable. I kind of like to switch it around a little bit and say, hey, we've got an opportunity here to actually reduce our risk. We can stop this to some extent. And isn't that a great way to be, right? Rather than think there's nothing that I can do, this is done to me, I'm in control of this, and activity is one way. I mean, there are lots of other ways. So weight, smoking, all those other things can impact your risk of cancer and respiratory diseases and cardiovascular diseases and so on. And so I guess I don't want to focus on my research on its own. I think there's a vast amount of research around the world that when you put together has a really strong evidence base to say, you know, we have an opportunity to make a difference to the number of people that die from preventable diseases. This is in our hands, right? This is in our control if we just give it a try. And I think the other really important thing that's often not communicated to the public is that if you're somebody that does no activity and you move from doing a little bit of activity, just a little bit, maybe 30, 40 minutes a week, that can have a massive impact on your risk of all-cause mortality. So it's not that you have to go and run a marathon, but you just have to do something. And that can make a really big difference to your risk, certainly in relation to cancer. You know, we've got good evidence now. So I'm not quite sure whether that answers your question or not, but
you did. Well, there's so many people, I think, that just are, you know, it's my genetics, it's the hand I've been dealt, it's just what's going to happen. I, you know, I have prediabetes, it means I'm going to get diabetes. And I'm like, guys.
Or my family has had a history of it.
Type 2 diabetes.
Realizing that, much of that is controllable and in many cases reversible. I mean, you can quite easily be pre-diabetic, you can be diabetic and you can reverse it. It is just literally a matter of what choices do you make?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing again is mental health. I mean, you can prevent or you can reduce your risk of having or experiencing, you know, poor mental health by remaining active. I mean, we've had that evidence for a long time in terms of the impact that activity can have on improving mental health. So I think it's important to focus on the physiological and the cardiovascular and all those types of diseases, but often it's also important to focus on mental health and also our social well-being, you know, interacting with others, and particularly for children, those social dynamics, the things that they learn from taking part in physical activity and cooperating are really important for good mental health in children too. And, you know, you sort of talked about sort of the internet and all those sorts of things. You know, we don't want our children doing that. for hours and hours at a time. We want them to be active and experience all the health benefits that physical activity can give, not least to prevent them developing diseases down the line, right? Because it's avoidable. It's in our control.
Funny, I feel that within the next decade, with all the research that's coming out, we're going to find that the mental health benefits of exercise probably exceed that of the physical, of the physical benefits that we receive from exercise, because a lot of the research, I've seen research on depression showing that, you know, as little as 60 minutes of exercise per week has a greater impact on lowering feelings of depression compared to pharmaceutical drugs. And, you know, people don't realize like the most powerful pill available to them is free. It's right there. It's just a matter of something like Snacktivity, which reminds them and encourages them to go do something and to do something intense. And that's going to, you know, raise up their endorphins. And we did a recent episode also, we were talking about the release of BNDF, which is, you know, a brain chemical that gets released from exercise, and that improves our learning and improves our feelings of well-being. And so, you know, I've never had anyone come to one of our studios and work out and walk out and say, well, now I feel worse than I did when I came in. It's never happened. Like, you only ever hear the opposite. It's always like,
that's a social media post this week, by the way. That's good.
It's always, I didn't want to come in. I didn't, we actually heard this quite a lot just this past Monday, because it was really rainy the night before. The morning of was just terrible. And most people walked in saying, I did not want to get out of bed this morning. But to a person, every single one of them said, oh, I feel so much better. I'm glad I showed up today. You know, and that is the power of exercise when it comes to our mental health, because now you're putting yourself in a position where you can be a better human being because you have the energy to do so, which I'm just going to go off on a quick tangent here. Also, the other aspect of exercise snacks that is so huge is that of energy. You know, instead of going for a snack in the middle of the day because you're feeling tired, you can implement an exercise snack and actually do a better job of increasing your energy post-exercise or post-activity.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of the key things about Snacktivity that we kind of advocate is that we say to the public, you can snack as much as you want. You can snack all day, every day, but on Snacktivity, not on food. So we're trying to change the word snack into a positive behavior on activity rather than a negative behavior around eating. You know, we've learned that snacks is a bad thing, but snacks doesn't have to be a bad thing if it's about physical activity. That's a really good thing. So trying to change the mindset. But Mike, you described really nicely there some of the benefits of physical activity. But the key thing is, how do we implement that? How do we get the public to believe us? How do we get the public to commit to a lifestyle and a habit that means that they experience all the great things that you've just talked about? And I think that's what Snacktivity is about. It's implementing something that we think the public can achieve, that they're not going to forget. I mean, no one forgets Snacktivity, right? Everyone gets the word, and it's not about food, and it's not about, you know, when we invite people to come and take part in our studies, they get the letter and think, hey, great, this is a study about eating. I can start to eat loads of snacks. And then they start to read and they realize it's got nothing to do with snacks, right? The complete opposite. This is about Snacktivity. And it kind of resonates with them. It's kind of fun. It's a bit cheeky. It's sort of a fun way to approach, you know, being more active, so that you know, they get the benefits that, as I say, that you described, Mike.
Let me ask this: you know, in any of your research, have you had anyone quit, like a group, like they don't want to do it because they can't even do 1 or 2 minutes?
Not so far. I mean, Snacktivity so far has been very individually based, because I talked at the start about it's integrated when people come and see their healthcare practitioner for a particular health reason. So people haven't quit. They might have reduced the number of snacks. And normally what happens is that people think, yeah, I can go out and I can do all these things. And then they sort of overdo it a little bit, and then they sort of steady down a bit. So we've certainly seen some of that. And the next phase of our research, we're going to be following people over a year And the Fitbit and the snack app that I talked about tells us how many snacks that they're doing. So we can monitor them and we can see them. And when things fall away a little bit, they'll get a prompt and they'll get some support to get help them get back in terms of their snacks. So it'd be great to come back in a year's time and tell you how, or I think we're going to be recruiting about 800 people over a year to see how they've been getting on with their snacks. So yeah, I'm happy to come back and tell you how they got on and what they've been doing in a year's time.
Sure, that's awesome.
Well, I think you also touched on something really important there, which is the role of accountability in helping people to build habits, because you know, you ask people to do this on their own, and oftentimes, you know, they don't know where to start, or when they do start to slip, there's nobody there to catch them or somebody to help them along and say, hey, like, let's just get things going again. And I think that's such a huge missed component of fitness in general. I mean, we've seen such a difference in people who say they work out with an exercise partner, or they go and participate in a group setting, or they have a personal training appointment. You know, those things, like, you cannot put a price on that. I know people like to put a price on it, but you really can't, because it, at the end of the day, that's what keeps you going. And if you have someone there in your corner who's kind of cheering you on those rainy days, you don't want to get up, but they're getting up and you have to go with them, it makes such a huge difference. And I think that's the nice component of what you're doing here with the app, is you now have that built-in accountability. You have those reminders.
Yep.
And that's ultimately, I think, what people need.
Yeah. Totally. I totally agree, Mike. I think we call it external accountability. So we know from evidence that's really, really important in terms of behavior change, you know, being accountable to somebody else. I don't think the person necessarily has to do it with you. It's better if they do, but I have to know that someone is looking and monitoring and you know, looking out for me in terms of my health and wants the best for me in terms of my health. So, you know, if you can get someone that you check in with, then that can make a big difference to, the rainy mornings when you think, geez, I really don't want to get out of this nice warm bed because it's so toasty. But you know, you have to, because you know, your champion or your buddy is going to be on your case. But it's in a positive way, right? It's just a little tap and a little nudge. I'm watching you and I'm on your side. I'm for you. Can make a big difference to your motivation to want to keep doing it when times, you know, and times in life are not always good, right? Times in life can be tough. And when those things happen in your life, often the first thing that goes is physical activity, right? Because it's the easiest thing to push to one side and move away. So if you have that external accountability, then it can really help. Certainly at this time of the year, when we're coming up to Christmas, we know from studies that, again, one of the first thing that goes over the Christmas period is activity. We're visiting friends, we're at home, we're more sedentary, it's cold, certainly in the United Kingdom. You think, geez, I'm not going out there today. And as a result, we often see people gain a lot of weight over the festive period. So it's important to keep that going too. And you can keep that going by doing lots of snack activity.
Love that. Well, my external accountability is sitting right next to me. I start to get sad and he's like, are you going to work out? Like, you're going to work out, right?
Yeah.
Big mental health benefit. Well, this has been such an amazing conversation. We so appreciate the work that you're doing. I mean, you could just hear your passion for wanting to help people, get them healthy, get them well. I mean, gosh, we just need lots of people like you in this world, Amanda. And if you do have resources to share, we would love to link those, of course, to your site on our podcast notes so that people can access those and start snacking along with us.
Yep, definitely. It's the way to be, right? Snacktivity.
Absolutely. Well, is there any place that people can connect with you online? Are you on Instagram, Twitter, anything like that?
So we have at Loughborough University, we have a website where we have a lot of the studies. So if they look at, it's called CLIMB. It's a research center, as in climb a wall. It's called CLIMB. And also I'm on Twitter. So if people want to connect there too, then they can do that.
Well, yeah, we will go ahead and link to that in the show notes. And once again, Amanda, thank you so much for spending this time with us today.
We'll see you in a year.
Yes, definitely. But yeah, thanks for the invitation. It's great to come and talk about snacktivity. And see you in a year.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.